Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Hello, everyone. This is Roberta Grimes, Seek Reality, and I'm delighted that you're with us today. I love doing this with you. As you know, if you've been together with me for a while, and we've been doing this for a while, we seldom talk with NDE experiencers in the whole 5 years of Seek Reality. I think we've only talked with two or three, and then we talked with two in the fall. Here's the thing. I have spent my life researching what actually happens at and after death. And I was so focused on that and really all pre-1950s stuff that I was worried about, you know, mucking up my views with things that were happening within NDEs. But that was really silly when you think about it, because NDEs are wonderful. What's great about them to me is that they prove that consciousness easily survives. They also prove that we are perfectly good. What could be better than that? So last fall we had Barbara Bartolome. She's a prominent speaker and leader in the International Association for Near-Death Studies and the founder and head of the big, big Santa Barbara chapter of IANS. I've been there a few times. We've also recently hosted Dr. Raymond Moody, and of course, he's the one who in 1975 coined the term near-death experiences in his great book, Life After Life. And now he and Lisa Smart are working on something called the University of Heaven as another way to get the word out. So I've decided I've got to broaden my view, and I've invited to be our guest today someone who actually has had an interesting lifetime, and his NDE wasn't even the most interesting part. So our guest today is Peter Anthony. He's an NDE experiencer who often speaks on this and a lot of other topics. He's a producer, an international psychic and paranormal investigator. We'll talk about that. A contributing writer for some spiritual magazines, a numerology life coach. His book about his own experiences is called Keymaster, and it came out a while ago. Peter tells me, though, that interest in the field of NDEs and spirituality and the things he investigates is growing so rapidly that he's busier now in this area than he ever was before. Welcome, Peter. I'm delighted that you're here.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And I have to say to your listening audience, thank you for tuning in. You know, having had so many different shows throughout my career, I'm always, you know, so humbled and at the same time deeply honored to be a part of this and to your listening audience. So I open myself up to you, and we'll talk about whatever you guys want to talk about.
Well, fortunately, I don't know, maybe it's fortunately for you, but I don't take questions. And the reason is I always plan carefully what we're teaching people so that the podcasts will be valuable. But everyone, you have the opportunity to ask questions, and Peter will answer those questions later. So don't hesitate if you're in the chat room to ask whatever questions you like. Now, I have a question for you, Peter. You were born in Copenhagen?
No, why do people? No. I was born in Dallas, Texas. I don't know why I don't know why there's.
It's in your bio.
Are you sure?
Yeah, well, that's where I couldn't have gotten it anywhere else. So I'll show you off air about where I saw it, so you can fix it, because I thought that was kind of an interesting little bio bit. But if that's not who you are, we really better get that changed.
Yeah, I don't know where that would have been. No, I was born in Dallas, Texas. I'm actually, for the first time in years, I'm stunned. I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say. But please
I thought maybe we were related, because I'm actually Danish 100%, kind of a strange thing, but I am. And so it seemed like we were neighbors, but we are still neighbors because I live in Texas too.
Oh, good.
If Keymaster really reads like a novel, this really happened?
Yes. I know many people, you know, say, oh, my God, this is just wild. But I think that, you know, every person in that book is a real person. The main character, obviously, you know, that everyone is fascinated by, is his name is Brussels. I could not remember his name. I could tell you everything about this man, but I can tell you this, for those who've had any kind of encounter, especially if it's in the angelic realm, you never remember their name, but you can remember everything that happens around it, including what I call the pause or the slow motion that takes place in life during this encounter.
Well, I believe it. One of the reasons I believe it is that yours is not the first story like this that I've heard. Garnet Schulhauser was a very straight-laced guy, and suddenly a bum on the street started talking to him and told him he was his spirit guide. And I didn't believe this for a minute when he first told me this story, but everything that the guy tells us through Garnet is true. And he came out, he literally had to come out to his very straight-laced world as someone who had this experience. He's done 3 books now with his guide. It reminds me a lot of your story, because what happened to you, and we won't give away a lot of it. I mean, this reads like a novel. It's not a long book. I very seldom get to read the whole book when people send me their books. I read this one because I couldn't put it down. I don't know what else I can tell you but that. I was waiting to hear the next thing that would happen to this poor young man. But it's a fascinating story. And it ended when you were, what, only in your 30s?
Even? Yes. Yes. Yeah. So imagine you go back to this angelic encounter, which takes place Good Friday, Easter. And you have to preface it by for your audience that I was agnostic. I didn't believe in angels. I didn't believe in God. I didn't believe in Jesus. I mean, I was born and raised Catholic, and by the time I got into my early 20s, I lost all of my family. So what little bit of faith I did have, it just sort of went out the door, and my life became, you work, you make money, you get married, you get you have kids, you get a house, you have a fence and a dog, boom. That was your story. And so it wasn't until this change, this encounter on Good Friday that took place, that was slowly and gradual, that introduced to me a whole new way of thinking. And again, you know, as a young man, I went in kicking and screaming, not believing in anything. And
yes.
You know, and then obviously by the time all these prophecies that took place began to make me think, oh my God, what is all this that's going on in my life? So I quickly began to understand that I had encountered something way beyond the realm of my understanding.
But you seem to have opened to it, but as I say, it reads like a novel. You could probably do good fiction, because, you know, you build the excitement and there's enough in the scene to put you in it, but not enough to be boring. So you do a good job of it, I thought.
Well, you know, this is my first time of writing, and I have to admit to you, I mean, I wrote this book on sticky notes, and so I had no idea what I was doing. I would sit down, I had the story to share. I have, my office is just full of people come into my office, they look at these sticky notes and my legal pads and envelopes and everywhere I traveled, hotel notepads, and that's how I wrote this book. I wrote from my heart, and then I sent it to an editor, and she was stunned that I had this storyline from start to finish without, you know, any writing classes, any experience.
Few people can do what you did, which is why I think it may have been partly channeled. That's very common, much more common than people realize. But let's talk, what I want to do is talk about, not so much your NDE, although we'll talk about that too, but
sure.
Your life has just been so interesting. You started out wanting to be a Hollywood makeup artist.
Well, I actually became a Hollywood makeup artist. I was studying to become a special effects makeup artist because I was very gifted as an artist. I could paint, I could sculpt, I could build, I could wood carve, I could do caricatures. I mean, I could do it all. And, you know, and also I got an art scholarship. So this was my calling. Back in the 80s, movies like Aliens and Terminator and
That kind of makeup. Okay.
Yes, I was going in to make monsters. And in order for me to get into the union, I took a job with CBS reluctantly, and so I went down the road of working with Dan Rather and Diane Sawyer when she was there at CBS, and I became a freelance image consultant from CBS, and that just open up a whole avenue of, you know, VIPs and celebrities. And obviously one of the reasons why I didn't want to take the job was because I was going to be working in the political arena, and I do not like politics. So there I was.
Yes.
So, you know, interesting looking back at it, it was perfect. Because I think part of my near-death experience afforded me the opportunity to look down at the planet and see where our country and the world was going politically. So for me, it was kind of a good undertone to begin with.
Yeah, well, I'm another person who can't stand politics to the point where I say a pox on both their houses.
We don't have a political
party at all now. That reminds me of something else I wanted to ask you, and then we're going to venture more into what you've been doing more recently. But Brussels, just to set the scene, everyone, Brussels is this very tall guy with white hair who's dressed a certain way. And or you want to describe it? You actually saw him, but I really saw him in my mind.
Well, Brussels, 6'7", 6'8", white hair, piercing blue eyes. Every time he appeared to me in my life, everything around me just came to a standstill. When I first met him in St. Thomas during Carnival, which is kind of a celebration to Easter, very equivalent to Mardi Gras, I was in a back alley taking a leak, and this man showed up, and it kind of freaked me out. And that was the first meeting and the first encounter that I met him, you know, at the Carnival. And he just came up to me and knew about my life and who I was. And it was rather eerie, actually. So I thought this man that I met was a stalker, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer or Charles Manson. So I did everything in my power to avoid this guy. So when he showed up on Easter Saturday at a place called Megan's Bay, everything on that beach went to a standstill. I remember in the book I described, there was a man diving for shells with dreadlocks. And I was watching this man, and everything just paused, as though someone had just pushed the pause button on your DVD player, and everything went to a standstill. Boom, and there he was. And so he began his prophecies with me in my life and where I was going. And at that time, as a young man, I was an introvert. I stuttered. I didn't say much of anything. I was around the wrong kinds of friendships. I have to be honest with your audience. I just wasn't the person I am today, obviously, but I was not my shining example of being best. So he kind of stepped in and in a very gentle way guided me towards a new way of understanding life.
But how did he choose you? Do you know that in any more detail, that you were chosen for this man to work with?
You know, yes, I have to go back a little bit here. I've had an encounter with this man for 26 years on Easter weekends. So you think about this started in St. Thomas, Good Friday, Easter Saturday, and Easter Sunday. And if you read the book to its end, it also takes you to Laguna on Good Friday. And my last encounter was 2007, Good Friday, atop Idlewild on the San Jacinto Mountains. So throughout these 26 years of this man in my life, he continued to educate me on feminine consciousness, the rise of women in power, not only politically, but women in general. He educated me on thought manifestation. He educated me on choices, how important all of our choices are. There are no victims on this planet. You know, everything is based upon your choice. And whatever choices you have in life, if you're in a bad relationship, that's your choice. If you're in a bad job, that's your choice. You are given a choice every day to make something work in your life. And so once I tapped into understanding what choice is really all about, my life began to unfold to where I am today.
But the sense I got was that there was work you were to do. Do you think you're doing the work he called you to do?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, at the time, I didn't know what he wanted me to do. I thought, like I said, I thought this guy was – I thought anything but an angel. I really do believe this man was my guardian angel. And for those who have had encounters with an angelic being, you know, you can't explain it. The only thing that you can explain is the white hair, the blue eyes, that everything does go on pause moment, and you never remember their names. But everything after that point, your whole life changes. I mean, your sense of taste and smell and touch, your sense of appreciation, your sense of people and kindness are heightened because of that encounter.
And do you know anybody else who's had the same experience?
Yes, Dan Millman.
Really? Can you tell us a little about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Peaceful Warrior. I mean, I didn't realize until producers came to me when they were shopping my book for a movie. Producers came down here and met with me and asked me if I had read Dan Millman's book, The Peaceful Warrior. I said, I have no idea who he is. And he was the same thing. He called his encounter Socrates. He could not remember his name. He described the same being, the white-haired, blue-eyed elder gentleman, very articulate, and had him focus on thought and consciousness and choice. So his was in the 70s. Mine was in the 80s. And I've spoken to other people who also have had encounters with what I call the Nordic angel, the tall, blue-eyed, white-haired angel. And I met a woman who came to one of my lectures in Los Angeles. And she was in a concentration camp, and she had an encounter with the Nordic angel. She called him the Schlüssel, the keymaster. And my whole world was just shocked when she came to my lecture and spoke of this man that she had encountered in the concentration camp. So it was quite a fascinating story. So do I believe in angels now? Absolutely. Do I believe that I was chosen? Absolutely. As are so many on this planet. The yes. only difference is I listened and I did something with the homework that was given to me.
It's true that many people are having experiences that they don't share. Only if they really trust you will they tell you. I tell people about my experiences, and then they will tell me theirs, which are often even better.
But you have to understand, Roberta, that people, are judged because of these things, and yes. they don't feel safe sharing their story. So when someone like you or I comes along and shares a story, me happen to be at a lecture, it gives people the freedom to share their story where they don't feel like they're nutcases.
Yes, yes.
Because, we might as well talk about we had dinner with the Loch Ness Monster on top of a UFO, or inside of a UFO. That's how people look at
it. It's a feeling, though. I mean, it isn't only that we don't want people to look at us funny, but it's also because these experiences are so precious and extraordinary. We don't want anyone to disparage them. Don't tell me that didn't happen. I know it happened. I was there. And that's how I can tell you feel, too, about what happened to you. About it.
I am now. Yeah. I mean, I didn't come out until 2007. You have to understand, I was with CBS News Division in a very high-profile career, working with very high-profile people, and my career began to rise, as you read in that book, and I couldn't share what was going on. You don't talk about your near-death experience, and then you don't add the angel encounter, and you don't add, obviously there was a stalker that was following me. There was so much in my world that I couldn't share, so I kind of was isolated, and I got caught. I became the country's youngest paranormal investigator. So, from the time I started working on homicide cases as a psychic, I didn't tell anybody. I wrote my book. I didn't tell anybody. I got caught in 2007. My boss came to me and said, "I saw you on television," and she asked me, "Are you a ghost chaser?" And I thought, "Well, I guess I might as well come out of the closet." I said, "Yeah, I've been doing this, since the '90s." And she was stunned. Yes. And then I told her I was giving her my 1 year's resignation, and she asked me why. It's because I'm writing a book. I'm moving back to California, and I'm going to go on a book tour. She thought I was a nutcase.
Yes.
And then I add the near-death experience, and I add the angel. I mean, there was a lot. It was the best moment of my life because it set me free. And I don't yes. walk in the opinion or the shadow of anyone's opinion no longer. I'm proud that it happened to me. I share my story. And by doing so, it has allowed other people to come forward and share their stories with me.
Yes. No, it's a wonderful thing. Now, people are listening and who are listening are wondering, what is this angel? And I thought a lot about it, having, you know, while I was reading your book, because everything that happens to the reality, we call it the greater reality, which is all that exists, is enormous and complex, much more so than is the universe. So all these things fit in, but it's hard to know where. There are very high-level beings spiritually, which tend to appear to people. They're usually glowing. You didn't see glowing, though, did you? I mean, I think
I did. Yeah, I saw glowing. I go a lot more into that in my second book, The Accidental Prophet. And I go into the glowing. I go into the gift of synesthesia. In other words, able to see not only the auras around people, but also around the animal kingdom.
We're talking about auras, too. We need a few programs here.
Yeah.
But just to finish that thought, these tall beings, which often glow in a color, will appear sometimes to regular people. My mother, when she was she was supposed to die. She didn't. She was in her late 80s. And she told me one morning when I went to visit her after all of this happened, I'm going to live longer, or I'm going to be here longer. And I said, well, how do you know that? She said, because the tall guy told me. What tall guy? Well, she had had one of these beings visit her. She told me all about it. She had never heard of them. She had no idea what that was. So everyone, this can happen to anyone. These very advanced beings, we can call them angels, we can call them guides, we can call them whatever we want to. But the point is, what happened here to Peter was real. It was real. And it's amazing and wonderful that you responded to it as you did. Not initially, maybe, but pretty quickly.
I went kicking and screaming. I mean, it really didn't happen until I came back and left the islands and came back. And, you know, in the book, he prophesied that I was going to meet the Pied Piper. And of course, there she was on October the 15th, which he also predicted that October the 15th would be a landmark date in my career, which it has been throughout my life. And there she was, this beautiful woman that just came into my life. And I just got off the phone with her right before I had a conversation with you. She's been my guide, my teacher, my best friend, my soulmate since 1983-84.
Right. Wow.
That's Nora in the book.
Yeah. So, oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. So just as I said, I mean, a great woman, just the best thing that ever happened to me. Talk about serendipitous. Someone walked across my path and has been with me at a hello since that day.
Yes. Well, she sounds like she would be a lovely person for anyone to know.
Yeah. Anyone. Absolutely. She just, when you meet her, you love her.
Okay. I want to talk to you about something that I disagree with Brussels about.
Sure.
And I wonder if you can, you know, in a playful way, talk with me about this.
Sure.
Brussels said, humankind has the opportunity to shift this planet into a new consciousness in 1987, 1992, 1994, 1997, 1998, and 1999. If the shift is ill-treated, the year 2001 will be a detour. Now, that sounds as if, I think he also said something about towers, too. I mean, it sounds as if he was really prophesying some realities, but he seems to believe that women are the key to not changing the course. Now, we know, just parenthetically, we know that there is an effort now, it has been for more than 100 years, to raise the consciousness of this planet. Many people, including you and me, are working very intensively to raise this planet's consciousness. But women, for Pete's sake, Brussels, what are you talking about?
I think the word he chose throughout the book, and that I still speak on it to this day, is called feminine consciousness. So let me repeat that word again. The word he used was feminine consciousness. Feminine consciousness is kindness and love, and not saying there's, you know, that men don't have that, but I think women tend to be more intuitive. I think they listen to their hearts and they're what I call the female voice a little more than men. Men are more logically based. Women are more intuitively based. And so as I learned to understand feminine consciousness, and especially in my industry, being in the television film industry, the women that I got a chance to work with, and you know, you see my resume of so many great actresses and television personalities and political leaders, they all seem to be women of power. And their stories and their backstories and how they got to where they were was just, to me, was amazing. But what I noticed, they never lost their femininity. They never lost that beautiful spirit of you know, I later would see women who would rise in power, and they became more aggressive and more more dominant and more, you know, back cutting. So you kind of lose that part of the feminine consciousness. I think we have the yin and the yang. You know, we balance with the male, the masculine energy, and we balance with the feminine or the yang, you know, energy. So this perfect balance of the yin and the yang, or the feminine and the masculine consciousness, I think is what Russell's is referring to. And the shifts of consciousness that he spoke of were actual dates that had a lot more to do with where the shifts of consciousness were going. So we could do a whole 3-hour show on
why don't we plan to do another one, and we'll talk about that, because the raising of the consciousness of the planet is extremely important. I've been given to know what will happen if we don't manage to get it done. So it's pretty alarming.
Well, here's a backstory real quick here.
Okay.
Look at where women are. Women showed up in this particular midterm election to make a difference. 60% more women voted this time around and made a shift in consciousness. And look how many women, you know, are now in Congress and also in the Senate. So that should be a hint to where we're going. So go ahead.
Well, I have a question.
Sure.
I am always male in every lifetime that I know anything about, and probably I'm told in all of them, I've always been male. I needed to be a woman in this lifetime. I remember at the age of 0 when I discovered that I was missing something important, and you're not supposed to even form memories then, but it was so important to me that I was missing the most important part of the body that that I remember it to this day. So I'm fine with being a woman, but I'm looking forward to going back to being normal. Where do I fit in then? A lot of people are in a different gender body just for this lifetime because it was part of what they needed to be doing in this lifetime. Some people were always women and they're male this time. Well, how do we fit in? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think, you know, the theory of reincarnation, what I learned from Brussels in my studies, especially, you know, Dr. Moody, you know, I think the perfection of soul is why we are here. You know, so an example as a writer, you know, when I did past life regressions, I discovered that I was a very successful writer, but I was an alcoholic. And so consequently, I never completed my success as a writer. And so, you know, when you see this in your past life regressions, you're going, no wonder when I would sit down and wrote this book. This is first draft. I handed this over to an editor, and she was stunned by what I had turned into her. So it goes back to that spiritual DNA, that thread never changes from lifetime to lifetime. What we come back here to do is to balance out what we did not do in the last lifetime, and the last lifetime before that, and so on and so on. And so in this lifetime, I use the disease of alcoholism. So maybe in this lifetime, you're to get sober, or maybe in this lifetime, you are to break the cycle of being in abusive relationships, or maybe in this lifetime, like myself, I'm here to be a successful writer. So everything's about perfecting the soul and using our God-given talents, our gifts, as it were, to do something in this lifetime with it.
For me, it was that I just needed to be a woman doing this work because they would
take what I'm doing.
I'm sorry?
Are you Aries or Leo or Sag?
Leo.
Okay, got it.
No, to me, I don't feel as you do about women in power, because I see women in power and I think that it doesn't work very well because they become the most negative. They become catty. Think about it. I mean, they become.
Well, I'm going to.
It's like fourth grade ended for them.
Reality, on my end of the reality, what I have seen of women in film who've come together, what I've seen in politics, women who've come together. Yes, I get that in the office place. I've seen that. I'm working in, you know, in the newsroom. I've seen that in working in advertising agencies. I've seen that in media. I've seen the rise for power, as I said, you know, by the 90s. I saw women basically stepping on other women. And, you know, so yes, yeah. I see that. But as a whole, when you think of the consciousness, women will think twice before they go to war, especially if they have kids. You know, women, as I said, operate predominantly from an intuitive level, where men will basically go back to the left brain based on the laws of logic of methodical and practical, where I think a woman, when she gets a hunch about something, she's gonna pay attention. So a general statement there. I don't want to get into the rise and fall of women in power and not in power, but what I've seen in my side of the fence in my career, I've seen a lot more women step up and do things and to help other women.
And I understand. I obviously have known a lot of women and have some of them have been wonderful people. I'm bothered now by the fact though that the women who are in power at the moment are trying to want to put men down. To me, that's not how you raise the consciousness of the
No,
planet.
No, yes, no. But yes, I know what I'm saying. I'm agreeing with that. It just bothers me so much to see that. And again, it goes back to what I said earlier. You know, we need to understand in order to elevate consciousness. You know, I for some reason the AA community comes to me just in droves, and I'm not an alcoholic. I don't do drugs or any of that stuff, but I do share their fourth and eighth step, and that means to do an inventory. And I think in order for us to really understand where we are in life, we have to do a thorough inventory of our own lives, our own choices, our own actions, you know, where we shine and where we didn't shine, and make amends to ourselves about those things. And what I'm seeing with power, we go into power. I think power basically corrupts. And I think if you have a good, solid soul and you have, you know, are kind, you know, I think people who have a good backdrop of kindness in their spirit, they remain kind. It doesn't mean that they give up. It doesn't mean that they don't shine. It just means that I think kind people, it's not that they finish last. I think people, we don't see enough kindness on the planet because we're so stimulated by the negative women, the negative men, especially in politics.
Yeah, not going down that becomes that toxic.
But I can tell you in my own life what I've seen with vets, with paramedics, with teachers, with social workers, with celebrities, female directors, female producers. So for me, it was a wow. Maybe he had a point here. Maybe there is a rise in feminine consciousness, and maybe women will take the reign of the wheel, if you will, and do something different. I mean, what do we have to lose here? We've had men doing it for century after century after century. Why not give a female president a chance to kind of change the history a little bit?
I don't know whether we should be choosing. I just don't know.
Yeah.
It just strikes me that there's tremendous amount of negativity coming at the moment from feminists. I mean, I'm a member of the first feminist generation. It was, we did have to fight hard and we did win, but it wasn't to knock men down, and that seems to be the goal now. I don't understand.
Well, I think that's media that brings it out. So let's not be seduced by the media and how they represent women. Because again, as I said, I see so many powerful women behind the scenes that are doing such great things. And, you know, and also I have a client base too. You know, I do numerology and astrology, and the women that come to me, the CEOs, the head of advertising companies, the politicians that come to me, the tons of women in film that come to me, producers, writing, casting directors, I can actually say for the first time in my history, I'm seeing something shift, and I'm very proud to be a man to say, you know what, I'd love to see a woman do something great on this planet. And if it's if that's the speakership, or if that's the president, or if that's a world leader, you know, I salute that part and welcome it, because I think we need a change here.
I do think we need to get away from being warlike, and if that's contributed by women, that will make a huge difference too. But let's talk a little more about the Accidental Prophet is coming out, right? It's not out yet.
No, I've got two more chapters before I'm finished.
And is that going to cover like the next period of time in your this book? I should tell you, I'm waiting to see how it turns out. You know how you do when you're reading a book that you're really into, and then I turn to the last page and it says to be continued. And I literally did look at the other pages, the blank pages beyond. It's, I can't believe he did this.
So, well, it's an old, you know, being in the television film, you know, industry for so many years, you know, it's called the cliffhanger, right?
Yeah, and, it certainly was a cliffhanger.
So yeah.
And this is a successor. This is the continuation, right, of that book?
I tell you what, page one, book two, picture right up there in Laguna, right there with Brussels, right there going up those steps to Pacific Coast Highway number one. And all right, it takes you all the way to September the 11th, Tuesday, where I'm supposed to be at the World Trade Center lecturing on how to make more money in the television film industry.
Wow.
And then book three picks up there and takes you back in history to World War II and takes you all the way up to the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Okay, so every time you've got one of these coming out, put me on your list because I want to continue to read your books. So now talk a little bit about your NDE because people are interested in them. I read it, but it was a lot of visions, as I recall.
Oh, my God. Well, that's a loaded question, and your audience, here goes. I clinically died on November the 11th at 11:11 p.m. for 11 minutes in operating room 11.
Oh, geez.
I know. So there are all those 11s there. So let me just, saturate right. Your audience with the 11:11. I was misdiagnosed 7 months earlier. I was diagnosed with a stomach ulcer, and I was taking Tagamet. And at that time, I was in the height of my career. And, most of us who are in the entertainment industry, we don't take vacations. We go off 3 months, 4 months, 6 months at a time. And me, I was the it boy, and I was traveling around. Not only was I working with CBS, but I was also a freelance image consultant. So I had a big, huge celebrity following, and Macy's Parade, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the Golden Globes, whatever it was, I had no life. I didn't have time to go to the doctor, so I just popped the pills, thought they would cure me. So by the time I got to the hospital on November the 11th after a wrap party, I had an intestinal, it's called a perforated viscus, an intestinal rupture. I began to bleed internally. Yeah. And in the middle of the AIDS epidemic, no doubt, they thought because I had lost so much weight and I had these spots on my face and because I had changed from my suit into some thrift clothes because I was bleeding all over myself, they thought I was homeless. So when I got to the hospital, rather than check me in, they pushed me down a corridor and left me there to die or to bleed to death. And so it was kind of a tragic moment. But, people ask me, oh, I don't want to have a near-death experience to go through all the stuff you went through. It was the best part of my life because look what happened. I got a chance to cross over. And I got a chance to believe in God again. And I got a chance to see my life. I got a chance to see myself writing books, plural. And I got a chance to see myself no longer stuttering. And I got a chance to see myself.
Yes, that's for sure. Listen to you now. Wow.
I know. I just, my whole life, the Peter Anthony that went in to the hospital that came out, two different people. Yeah, I have to share this with your audience. I was a skilled artist. As I said to you earlier in your program here, I could sculpt, I could paint, I could sketch, I could build, I could carve. I can no longer draw a stick figure.
There was good stuff and bad stuff that came out of it.
The good stuff was I became a mathematician.
So what you're saying is that the experience reoriented your talents so that you became a mathematician instead of or a numerologist instead of someone who has artistic talent. Why did that happen? You have any idea?
Yeah, I do. There are so many of us who've had near-death experience. So many come back. I have a lady experiencer who came back as a painter, and she paints all these canvases of her near-death experience. Never had any artistic ability like me.
Oh,
she could draw.
That, yes, I've heard of that.
Yeah, people who come back as musicians. There was a guy who had a near-death experience who came back as a pianist. So who knows why this happens? I don't know if they reprogram us up in heaven and they said you don't need that anymore. You're going back with this and this and
clearly
beyond.
It seems to be something like that. Yeah.
Well, I think it's called the miracle of proof in the pudding, if you will, of being in heaven. People who come back, first of all, they shun us. They don't welcome us. And then we come back with these amazing gifts and they think, maybe we should listen to this guy. I had no writing experience and yet I'm on my third book.
Yes.
How do you explain that? I worked as a paranormal investigator using math as my guiding principle to solve crime. How do you explain that? So, there has to be something to whatever happened to be on the other side.
Yes. And what's important for people to know is that near-death experiences happen in an area which is much greater than the universe. It's called the astral Part of it is where we go when we die. Part of it is a million other kinds of things. It's one of the things we do once when we die, but through a normal process, is we spend time traveling in the astral. And that's like the most fun you can imagine in your life, because literally anything. You just think, I want to see this or that. I want to walk with dinosaurs, whatever you want. You think it and you're there with them. So I don't at all think that it's unlikely that this all happened, because you were in this enormous expanded reality where time doesn't exist. So you said your watch was having problems then too. There's no time there. There's no space there. It's all enormous, but there's no space. It's amazing.
Well, you're in the now moment. You are so completely immersed in the now.
Right.
And, you know, for me, right, when I was crossing over, I downloaded the collective intelligence. So imagine the mind of Darwin and Einstein and Tesla. You know, imagine the mind of your high school English teacher, you know, or any great person that you think is far superior in terms of intelligence. You know, imagine that going into your mind and you getting every bit of it. So that was a miracle.
But you didn't remember it, right? I mean, people will say, I knew everything, but they said you won't remember it when you go home, and I ended up not remembering it. Did you remember any of it?
Oh, if you read my book, look what I remembered in detail.
Well, but I didn't see it as focused on that. I really did see you going through a journey, which was really very – it was – many people who would go through your life would be much more sort of ephemeral in the way that they think or the way they act. But you really seem to be down to earth all that time. And I think that's one reason we can identify so much with you as you're doing it. Because you're not an angel. You're a real person. And whatever happened to Baxter, by the way?
Oh, you want to know something? And for those who have pets, and I'm talking about this in my next book, there are pets in heaven.
Oh, and, of course there are. Yes.
And so, you know, I just rescued, I've rescued two dogs here in the last several months. I just rescued a new little baby. I call her Tennessee. And I have to say to you, you know, you read about the two cats I had. I know for a fact, you can say anything you want and discredit me with this. I know for a fact that Baxter has returned to my life, and Honey has returned to my life. Both those cats are now dogs with me, and they have the same temperaments, the same. My big dog that I refer to as Baxter, I don't know how many dogs you have that before they go to do their little business outside, he likes to dig like a cat, create this little mound, do his little business, and then he covers it up.
Oh, that is really weird.
Yeah. And Baxter walked on a leash. So,
we
you know, my
tell
cat.
Quickly, that Baxter was tragic house fire. He had two cats, Honey and Baxter, and I kind of liked Baxter. And then Baxter didn't survive the fire.
It broke my heart. And it broke my heart. And, you know, I just can tell you that, you know, something that was taken from my life returned to my life. I tell you, I look at this dog and know it's Baxter just by the way he talks. Baxter,
that's actually
right on
not
my
that
shoulders.
Uncommon. People
yeah,
need to know that that can happen. If you love an animal, they will sometimes come back to you. Usually as the same species, but maybe not always.
Yeah, have you seen A Dog's Purpose? You need to watch that movie and see what happens. And this brilliant little movie about a dog that reincarnates and keeps trying to find its original owner. Well, I think that's what happened to me.
Yes, yes, yeah. I've heard about that one. This is a very interesting to me. We have a lot more to talk about, so we'll arrange each time a new book comes out. Just let me know, and we'll
sure.
talk about some of the rest of this stuff. But what do you want people to take away who read your book, who hear you talk? What do you want them to take away?
Well, I think my book is a message of hope. And the reason why I say a message of hope is because we've kind of lost that. You know, what we've done, we've gone into this whole me consciousness, my job, my money, my education, you know, my
yes.
apartment, my me. And we've kind of forgotten the we. And I think, unfortunately, we're in a time in our history where our current political leaders on either side of the fence or more concentrated on what I call the monetary gains. And we've kind of forgot the basic principles of us, We've given our power away to people who are so eagerly to take it away from us. So I think if anything, what's falling apart for us on a political level is bringing new awareness on another area of our life. I cannot tell you how many people I have encountered who I would never have thought would have come forward. There's something I talk about. I just had this conversation with Nora, one of my characters. I say, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. It didn't say the red or blue parties. It didn't say the pharmaceutical companies. It did not say in the Bible the oil companies, or for that matter, you know, the Wall Street. It simply says, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And I think what I'm seeing in my world is good, kind people have been stirred to come forward and to make a difference on this planet. So you ask me what my book is all about. My message is about you're going to love, you're going to care, and you're going to put your hand out there and you're going to help people, because that's what you learn on the other side. There is no religion. There is no straight. There is no gay. There is no Christian. There is no Muslim. There is the spirit of love, the essence of love, and that is what you're taught on the other side. You come back to live life, to know that this moment in your life is a gift. Every moment of your life, the breath of life, is a gift. And I have learned to worship, to understand, to value, to play gratitude to every moment of my life. You have to understand, folks, I couldn't see. I went blind. I was in a wheelchair. I was 89 pounds, and they couldn't cure me and gave me 3 months to live. And here I am talking to Roberta. So so you know what? Listen to your heart and listen to your inner truth. That's what this book teaches you.
And what's your website?
Theaccidentalprophet.com.
Okay, great. Perfect. I'm so sorry. We have to we will do this again, though, but we've come to the end of our time. And everyone, this has been Roberta Grimes, Seek Reality, and I'm so glad you could be with us today. Please never forget that you are a powerful, eternal being. You never began, you never will end, and when you really understand everything that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is going to be our wonderful friend, Sandra Champlain. She began her career, believe it or not, as a skeptic. She just wanted to know what happened to her father. Could he still possibly be alive? But she didn't believe in it. And then she didn't just read, you know, talk to mediums, read things. She taught herself, and she took classes to become several different kinds of medium. And she investigated other phenomena with herself at the center. She learned how to do all of this, and she came to understand that indeed, of course, we are eternal. We know that's true. So then she wrote We Don't Die. And then she began the We Don't Die podcast series. And many people who listen to Seek Reality love what Sandra does. And they also listen to We Don't Die. We compare notes sometimes about what we're doing next. And she is now in the process of trying to come up with a way to teach people about these kinds of communication individually in certain parts of the country. She's bringing in Sonia Rinaldi, for example, who is the greatest experimenter with electronic communication who exists, and others. So I'm excited about what she's doing. It's a new idea, and we're going to talk about that. Now, today, our guest has been the fascinating Peter Anthony. We're going to talk with him some more, because there's a lot more that I haven't even shared with you. We didn't have time. His NDE was important to him, but I think his whole story is one that helps when you really understand what happened to him. It really stretches your understanding of what's really going on. As I say, I group him with Garnet Schulhauser in the way he was touched and his life was transformed, and now he's doing this work. And there are at least two, maybe three interviews with Garnet in the Seek Reality archive, so you could learn a little about him too. I didn't want for a long time to talk with NDEers, because the dead keep telling us it's a one-way trip. You don't come back from death. No, but what you do is you go into the astral, which is many times the size of a little place where we, you know, go, and it's a one-way trip. And that's all just as beautiful and wonderful. And people like Peter and all these NDEers are in these places. They're learning things they could not possibly learn if they were not talking with the people who really know the truth. So I've become a fan now of NDEs, rather late, but I am. And I'm very, very happy to bring people like Peter to you so you can see just what it does in people's lives. It's transformative. As you know, my nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, my Thomas, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever. The Fun of Living Together, and a couple of children's books, the first of which is The Fun of Meeting Jesus. My next adult fun book is going to be The Fun of Loving Jesus, and I'm going to be talking about that in a couple of weeks. All of my books are available, of course, except the children's books, as ebooks. And if you want to ever talk to me about my books or about anything at all, you can always reach me through robertagrimes.com. Just go to the contact block there and send me an email. If you don't get an email within a couple of weeks, because sometimes it takes that long for me to finish doing them, just send me another one. It means that you didn't give me your right email address. I answer every email. Past episodes of Seek Reality are available on webtalkradio.net and iTunes and iHeart and in a bunch of other places. Just understand that I want to teach you to know all the things you're going to know so you can make the most of this lifetime. If there's someone you think we ought to talk with, let me know. If there's something you're wondering about or you're worried about, let me know. You are powerful, indestructible, eternal, and perfectly loved, and it's my job to help you see that. Meanwhile, of course, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality. Always knowing, never forgetting that you in particular are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.